Okay, so this is class four of The Burning House. We're reading this book by Shanti Garba, A Buddhist Response to the Climate and Ecological Emergency. This is, I think this book is thought-provoking. It's a nice jumping-off point for conversation. It's not just about In some ways, it's not just about the climate and ecological emergency. It's about all the kinds of dire things that are going on in the world and how we might respond as Buddhists. Over the course of this class, it's becoming more clear to me. I'm really appreciating the conversations that we're having, and it's clarifying to me how we can come together as Sangha to discuss these things in a fruitful way, a fruitful and supportive way. And if any of you who've been participating so far or now, if you have any feedback or anything that you think hasn't worked or things you wish we had done or discussed or something, please feel free to let me know. This topic is not going away. But one of the things that did occur to me is that this class, this series that we're doing together, is not, we're not here to talk about the climate and ecological emergency. In a sense that we're not here to talk about it, the details of what's happening or not happening, or dire circumstances or speculation about whether humanity is going to get its act together or not. Things have really changed. Even just a few years ago, I would think it would be necessary to talk about those things. But I think things are changing so that it comes up much more often in the news, much more often. The climate and ecological emergency is connected to things that are going on. And then, of course, some of us, deliberately are trying to stay connected to it. If you are interested in doing that, I'm sure there's many ways, but I find The Guardian. I subscribe to The Guardian online, and they have a climate change section. I mean, they can be criticized for many things, but at least they are doing their best to, well, I don't know about their best, but they're doing it. They're at least, trying to make it a section, trying to make it a continuing point, not just like a one-off article here and there. So I think we all are well aware of this. Somebody recently came here and mentioned, like, a little skeptical about coming to the class because, like, just already feels overwhelmed with all of this, right? Didn't want to just come and talk more about it. So I recognize like that isn't a fruitful use of our time together, which isn't very long. And then also, I think we've been doing a good job of treading the line between talking too generally, just problems in the world, but not getting too bogged down in specifics. Because as soon as we get to specific, political choices, lifestyle choices, whatever, all of what we share, all this common aspiration tends to start breaking down into debate. And is it vegetarianism versus veganism? And is it da, 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 da. And it's not that those aren't worth Questions aren't worth contemplating, but it's generally not a very fruitful or satisfying experience to just spend our class time debating about that. And then, of course, also the third thing is just doing our own practice. So, we may mention a choice we've made, we may mention something that's happening as it relates to ourselves and our practice, our response, our attempt to cope or understand, etc. So, and absolutely minimizing whenever possible or avoiding complaining or criticizing the behavior of other people. And obviously, not just the people in the room, but like those people out there who do that thing. Just not that fruitful a use of our time. So that as a background, as I sat down to prepare for this class, so we were supposed to be covering two chapters, Compassionate Action Based on Wisdom, which I thought was a good chapter, but I was very intrigued. He has a chapter on the five precepts. So he talked about the five precepts. So we have are called 16 bodhisattva precepts. That's the refuges, the three pure precepts, and then there's 10 grave precepts, like 10 specific, rubber meets the road precepts. And traditionally, those are actually like oftentimes you'll see only the first five treated as central to lay practice. Do not kill, do not steal, do not misuse sexuality, do not speak dishonestly, and do not abuse intoxicants. So, or not become intoxicated, polish clarity, dispel delusion. So we'll only concentrate on those first five as being, well, actually, anyway, I was thinking of doing that. and I was just like, I didn't necessarily get that much out of his chapter, but I started thinking about our precepts and how every year we study our precepts, our 16 bodhisattva precepts together, and they're very, very central to our practice. And somehow we get together and discuss a precept like do not kill, and somebody each year of a senior student will present on a precept and talk about, our aspirations, how complicated it is, some of the challenges, things that are clear, things that are not so clear, because even in a precept like do not kill, there's like do not kill people, that's pretty clear. Okay, do not kill animals. Maybe is it okay to kill and eat animals in a certain setting? Is euthanasia okay? Death of animals is required and is involved in, even if we just eat eggs or cheese or anything like that. And actually, like my organic farmer friend says, they supplement their soil with bone meal and blood meal. Like, this is just like the death of, if you think about it, like in natural times, there would be animals out there dying and their parts of them would return to the soil and enrich the soil. Anyway, my point is that it's complicated. And we are able in our precept classes to discuss these things in a way that is very respectful and fruitful. We're doing our own practice. We talk about, our choices. I've chosen to do this. I've chosen to do that. And I've always been thinking, like, it sure seems like our precepts should apply beyond our own personal lives, beyond our own personal sphere of existence. They have more implications. So, do not kill becomes, all right, I didn't kill something, but I'm involved in a system that is causing the destruction and death of said animals or things or even people, right? So there becomes it becomes much more complicated. So we've been talking about collective karma. So I was thinking, like, okay, well, maybe we can like brainstorm on like how precepts might look if we kind of expanded them beyond just our immediate lives. But it turns out, as some of you may know, Thich Nhat Hanh did this in like 1966. So he started what's called the Order of Interbeing, and he has 14 precepts. And, these are, I could come up with my own, but they're probably not as good as Thich Nhat Hanh's. And this was coming out of like monks who were coming out of the Vietnam War, responding to the Vietnam War, exiled from their country. This is like real stuff, right? It's not just a bunch of armchair philosophers coming up with these alternative precepts, which are very tied to and connected to our Buddhist precepts. So I am going to post a link in the chat to these 14 mindfulness trainings. And we're also going to read them out loud. So if anybody, can't pull them up. Be Okay, so these are the 14 mindfulness trainings, and then I make copies for a class, and then they all just get recycled afterwards anyway. So I made five. So maybe if you can just kind of hand them out evenly, and kind of share, and if you want to look at what has just been read, go ahead and ask somebody to show you the paper. And I'm going to ask, so there's 14 of these, so I don't know that we'll get through all of them. But I was going to have maybe cloud people read them because frankly we can usually hear and see cloud people better than you can see and hear us. I'm just gonna go quickly through the first three, which and I'll just read them myself. Because he added these, they added these. So there are like thousands of people ordained into the order of interbeing, lay and formerly ordained people. And they started off very wisely, I think, with these precepts about mindfulness trainings, as they call them, openness, non-attachment to views, and freedom of thought. Because you could imagine, perhaps, an order adopting their principles and then, going out to like, pass on their principles and convert people to their principles, which then takes on a different tone than they wanted. So the first mindfulness training, openness, aware of the suffering created by fanaticism and intolerance. We are determined not to be idolatrous about or bound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones. We are committed to seeing the Buddhist teachings as guiding means that help us develop our understanding and compassion. They are not doctrines to fight, kill, or die for. We understand that fanaticism in its many forms is the result of perceiving things in a dualistic and discriminative manner. We will train ourselves to look at everything with openness and the insight of interbeing in order to transform dogmatism and violence in ourselves and in the world. So, I was kind of going through these today and kind of thinking like, would I take this precept? And most of them I would. Were you going to say something?
No,
Oh,
sorry.
okay. No,
Sorry.
never mind.
I'm just enjoying it. Sorry.
Yeah, so my one exceptions, I have two exceptions, okay, which come on later on. And that is like, so when we finally get around to talking about sexuality, if you ordain into the order of interbeing, you do not have sex outside of committed long-term loving relationships. I personally don't think that's necessary. I think that's kind of outdated and square, but that's just me. And whatever, like if you wanted to be ordained into this, then you would just agree, right? But it's interesting because they have in their community, they have people that they call like the core of the community who've taken all these precepts and live by them. And then they have kind of an extended community that haven't vowed to follow them in the same way, but they are supportive. Like they endorse the spirit of it and kind of do their best and help support those who have taken the vows. So I think that's really interesting. It's not like, again, it's not like, oh, you've taken up the precepts of interbeing, you know? It's a very open thing. And then the second one is no alcohol, which I'm not really ready to do. I don't feel the need to do, but whatever. But most of this is very lovely. So the second one that I will go through quickly is non-attachment to views, aware of the suffering created by attachment to views and wrong perceptions. We're determined to avoid being narrow-minded and bound to present views. We are committed to learning and practicing non-attachment to views and being open to others' experiences and insights in order to benefit from the collective wisdom. We are aware that the knowledge we presently possess is not changeless, absolute truth. Insight is revealed through the practice of compassionate listening, deep looking, and letting go of notions rather than through the accumulation of intellectual knowledge. Truth is found in life, and we will observe life within and around us in every moment, ready to learn throughout our lives. So I can imagine, like, if we did precept classes on these every year, that would be like a really juicy discussion that we would have. But I love thinking about these the same way that we tend to think about our precepts. Our precepts, if you interpret them at the most subtle level, are very like are impossible to keep. And we talk about holding no thought of killing, like no thought of like cutting anything off and wishing it didn't exist, which is like, or do not indulge anger. Anger arises. And like, so we recognize it's very difficult to keep these precepts, but that's not a reason not to hold them as aspirations. The third being freedom of thought, aware of the suffering brought about when we impose our views on others. We are determined not to force others, even our children, by any means whatsoever, such as authority, threat, money, propaganda, or indoctrination, to adopt our views. We are committed to respecting the right of others to be different, to choose what to believe and how to decide. We will, however, learn to help others let go of and transform fanaticism and narrowness through loving speech and compassionate dialogue. How about that one for a tough one? So, okay, so from here on out, thought we'd pause for just like there's so many of them, but just to pause for a few moments on like, I don't know, would you take this precept? Does it seem difficult? Does it seem related to our climate and ecological emergency in a way? And other forms of suffering. Let's see. So, could I have a volunteer to read the fourth mindfulness training who happens to have it up? Jinryu.
I'm unmuted. I didn't realize I was. The fourth mindfulness training, awareness of suffering. Aware that looking deeply at the nature of suffering can help us develop understanding and compassion. We are determined to come home to ourselves, to recognize, accept, embrace, and listen to our own suffering with the energy of mindfulness. We will do our best not to run away from our suffering or cover it up through consumption, but practice conscious breathing and walking to look deeply into the roots of our suffering. We know we can realize the path leading to the transformation of suffering only when we understand deeply the roots of suffering. Once we have understood our own suffering, we will be able to understand the suffering of others. We are committed to finding ways, including personal contact and using telephone, electronic, audiovisual, and other means to be with those who suffer so we can help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy.
This feels a little bit like my what I've been calling bearing witness in some ways, but it also includes that kind of, you know, the bodhisattva vows to practice and liberate themselves from suffering, but all as part and parcel with, like, and then doing that for the benefit of all beings, including self. Jinryu.
Well, the only thing I mean, nobody's asking for edits. But the only thing I might add, and this is based on my own experience, is that being committed to finding ways, including personal contact, telephone, electronic, audio, visual, and other means to be with those who suffer so we can help them transform their suffering into compassion, peace, and joy. And I would be mindful that being with them also transforms me and helps me become more compassionate, more peaceful, and joyful.
Thank you. Tyler?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it's, we are at a moment in history right now, I mean, literally, you know, this month, where there's really acute levels of suffering happening around the world, both locally and internationally. And yet we're coming into a time of the year in our culture where we start kind of refocusing on joy and you know, and this sort of like the bringing of the solstice or whatever it is or something. But Ma, it's tough to find that balance between, I mean, we deserve to have joyful time in our life, but we live in a very lucky place and we're witnessing a lot of horrible things going on in multiple places around the world right now. But my partner and I have been talking about how we balance bearing witness and acknowledging that suffering that's going on and what our complicit roles in it one way or another, but also, you know, having to witness, you know, acknowledge your own suffering and still be allowed to have joy in this world, in yourself, despite others' suffering. So it immediately brought me to these conversations we've been having in our family right now about how we sort of are aware of suffering in a meaningful, positive way and not just getting depressed and saying, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to lay on the floor and give up. That's, you know, like, yeah, that's just, it seems really poignant right now, this one.
There was something in this chapter by Shanti Garba about this. I think it was maybe in the compassion chapter before the precept chapter. And I wouldn't be able to find it at short notice, but it was something along the lines of how when we are kind of bearing witness, he didn't use that term, but bearing witness to suffering, how we can actually kind of distance ourselves from it when we're relating it to it as suffering, just, oh, that suffering, and we're kind of overwhelmed by the suffering, but we're focusing on the suffering and not on the beings who are suffering. And that when we shift that focus onto the beings who are suffering, and somehow, which, you know, at a distance is difficult, but if we're able to focus our attention onto beings who are suffering, it's a very different thing, right? It's not a kind of overwhelmed, kind of paralyzing thing. It's a very natural, responsive thing to respond to the beings who are suffering in front of us. And it's not some theoretical thing that we're supposed to do to respond. Our response arises based on what is needed in front of us. Which is very difficult to do when people are far away, and yet there's, like you said, there's always suffering around us that we could do something about or just be present with. Yeah.
And I find that when you actually focus, well, if you're focusing on collective suffering, it's overwhelming and you feel desperate because you're like, oh my God, what can I do with that? But when you are focusing on individual suffering, you are literally suffering. You feel the pain as if, not as if you're them, but it's much more personal and it is overwhelming in a completely, like in a physical way. So that's my experience at least. And I think it's not to say that it's not, you should avoid it. But I think taking breaks would be the right way.
Could people hear that? Oh, too bad. Well, anyway, next time I'll have you come set up here. But just similarly, if I can rephrase, like, yeah, that it's very different relating to collective suffering. And when you're relating to suffering that's right in front of you with somebody that also can be quite overwhelming, but kind of in a different way. All right, let's move on to the fifth one. Because I mean, in some ways, like the as a whole, they fit lots of pieces in here. We could do a dirt sendo reader. Do we have a dirt sendo reader? All right, Jade. And if you can come up here, that'd be great. Fifth mindfulness training.
The fifth mindfulness training, compassionate, healthy living. Aware that true happiness is rooted in peace, solidarity, freedom, and compassion, we're determined not to accumulate wealth while millions are hungry and dying, nor to take as the aim of our life fame, power, wealth, or sensual pleasure, which can bring much suffering and despair. We will practice looking deeply into how we nourish our body and mind with edible foods, sense impressions, volition, and consciousness. We are committed not to gamble or to use alcohol, drugs, or any other products which bring toxins into our own and the collective body and the consciousness, such as certain websites, electronic games, music, TV programs, films, magazines, books, and conversations. We will consume in a way that preserves compassion, well-being, and joy in our bodies, and the consciousness is and in the collective body and consciousnesses of our families, our society, and the earth.
How's that for a free sound? It occurs to me that, part of the power of precepts like this, like our precepts and like these, would be in the support of a community of people who are doing it together. Where I look at this, I'm kind of like, I don't know that I could like just do this on my own, right? But if you were part of a community that was really mindfully and non-judgmentally just really trying to do this and be really mindful about it, then I could see it maybe even like changing certain life choices and behaviors and stuff like that that I might not otherwise. Other thoughts?
There's a lot open for interpretation here of, I mean, which music, TV programs
Yeah,
connect into our problem,
and
which
like,
one?
and what is wealth?
Yeah.
But I think that's if a community approached these in the same way we approach our precepts, we say do not be mean or stingy with dharma or wealth. What is that? How much are you supposed to give? How much are you supposed to keep? What's a healthy boundary? Like, so it's almost like it's good that it's open to some interpretation. Like I said, I kind of wish it was just, we will not abuse intoxicants. That's what we say. We will not abuse intoxicants. Does this kind of thing, I mean, does it kind of So anybody for whom it kind of appeals, that just to think that you might adopt or kind of be part of a community that where that would just be clarified and help you live a little more.
Another thought though is, I know we had the one about openness and not having dogma. This one could become dogma.
Yeah.
Right? If there's too many strict rules here.
Yeah.
So it could be opposing a little bit.
Well, I'm not opposing. I think that's why they have those first three. I think that's...
So then look at this, but don't be fanatical about it, yes. Right? Because it said we don't want the fanaticism.
Yes, yes.
So...
I mean, I think some are probably very cleverly designed, right? Yeah. Like they first started talking about like, well, maybe we should make vows about this. And then be like, whoa, like, I think we need to add some no fanaticism right. Vows. Andrew.
I was just going to
say. Do you want to, sorry.
So going off what you were asking, maybe it's, or at least this is the way that I apply it to my practice. I think like you're asking what electronic games, what music TV programs and so on and so forth. I think it kind of each person has to decide that for themselves and how that affects them and others around them. For one person, it may be one program. For the next person, it might be a completely different program. And for me personally, I drink a little bit, not a lot. So for me, not abusing intoxicants is knowing how much I allow myself to do that. For someone else, not abusing intoxicants may mean not at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of up to each person to decide for themselves based on how it affects themselves, and how it affects themselves is how it also spreads out into the world and the people around you.
Thank you. And Mick.
Yeah, I think like, I don't know, maybe this is just my own background coming into it, but there's always this temptation for me with precepts in particular to like, you know, the harder that they seem to keep, the more like, the more it shows you're like into it, you know? And I think that that's like a very slippery slope of like, you know, almost like fanaticism, you know, like we're just in a competition to suffer. And, you know, I mean, the more you suffer, the more it shows you care, I guess. But like, I don't know. I think for me that this one seems really easy to spin into an unhealthy space about being like just, like fanatic, I guess, is the easiest way to do it.
Well, at first reading, I'm thinking this sounds very Christian-y to me, right? And it's like, ooh. But I think when you really read into it, I think it's really about making mindful choices. Mm-hmm. I think we were talking about a TV show recently about Succession. I don't know if you guys ever see Succession. I had to stop watching because everybody there was so awful. And somebody else in the Zendo said, oh, I love that show. But I just couldn't stand how everybody was so mean to each other. And so I just stopped watching it. I never went back. But I think that's what, and I've noticed lately that I have been making, I think we talked about my vows. I sucked at my vows because I watch mindless TV. But I also have recently started making choices about not watching just awful things like Succession and people where people are going to be mean to each other, and just watching something where I can learn from it and feel good about my choice. If I'm going to be watching TV, I don't want to feel guilty about it, I guess. So I guess that's just all I wanted to say is just, I guess it's just being more mindful and conscious of the decisions that we make in our lives.
So I'm actually, in the interest of time, I want to skip over to the juicy ones because there's like, okay, you know, like taking care of anger. All right. Dwelling happily in the present moment. Those are cool. But let's skip to the 11th one, right? Livelihood. So do I have another cloud volunteer to read the 11th mindfulness training, right? Livelihood. Vic.
The 11th mindfulness training, right livelihood. Aware that great violence and injustice have been done to our environment and society, we are committed not to live with a vocation that is harmful to humans and nature. We will do our best to select a livelihood that contributes to the well-being of all species on Earth and helps realize our ideal of understanding and compassion. Aware of economic, political, and social realities around the world, as well as our interrelationship with the ecosystem, we are determined to behave responsibly as consumers and as citizens. We will not invest in or purchase from companies that contribute to the depletion of natural resources, harm the earth, or deprive others of their chance to live.
This seems impossible.
Yeah.
Coral just said, this seems impossible. But what if we approach this like just like our other precepts, which seem impossible, but nonetheless we try. Seems kind of cool.
I mean, I think for me, the biggest difference between these as sort of like an aim and our precepts as an aim, these are very, very specific in certain ways that ours are more open, you know, like they're not going to invest in or purchase from companies that contribute to the depletion of natural resources. That's very, very specific. And that, again, to me, that's the piece that seems like literally impossible.
It's true, but imagine, and I'm not proposing this, I just thought it was, I thought what was intriguing to me as I thought about this is as a community, and not just as our one small Zen center, but like Zen Buddhists, people of faith, whatever, like, do we cop out sometimes because our moral guidelines aren't specific enough? You know, for instance, we have our three peer precepts: do no harm, do only good, do good for others. But then we have the 10 grave precepts, which say do not kill, do not steal, do not misuse sexuality, do not be stingy. Like it gets more specific. And then when we're faced with this huge, just incredibly complicated moral quandaries of modern life, it kind of like, in what way should we get any more specific? And there's part of me, I similar, was like, I don't know what I want to go down that road, right? But I don't know. I just thought about, you know, if a community perhaps was to like, okay, we're gonna work on this together, not investing in or purchasing from companies that contribute to the destruction. And then together, we're going to talk about that. We're not going to debate and argue and I'm gonna try to win and prove you wrong. But like, what does that mean? Does that mean we don't use any natural resources? Like what exactly does that mean? How much is too much? How much is unavoidable? Like to explore those things together, I don't know, seems kind of appealing to me. I guess I'm just gonna like playing with the idea. Was Jinri or Tyler first? And then was Rina and Jen.
Jenny. Yeah, I'll be very brief. I support what you're saying 100%, Domio. And I think that what I want to say is important to say, given that we're going to be doing the precepts in the next 2 to 3 months. Maybe it's my age. I don't know what it is. I'm a pretty devoted practitioner, but I approach these things the precepts included, in the same way they approach the four great bodhisattva vows. I know they're impossible. I know I'm not going to hit every single one of them out of the park. But as I study them and go through them, I learn things and I learn a new habit I can try to get myself closer to the ideal that is described in a particular precept. I do not find the last couple that people said, well, this is just impossible. And I'm only reading it for the first time. I take a lot of time to muddle through these things, but just at my first glance of it, I don't find these impossible at all. Now, I'm not saying that I find them possible to do 100%, but I don't find it impossible at all to move toward that and to talk about it. The more we talk about it, the more we can get things going. And that's to me is what is appealing about these. I find these very freeing, what we have read so far. I find them wide open and freeing and making me think about, oh, I can do this better kind of a thing.
Let's do Jen and then Tyler.
So I'm thinking that there's doing it for ourselves, for our own spiritual health, and doing it to get a result, like to actually change what's happening. And I just recently learned that the concept of the carbon footprint, maybe you all know this, but it was actually started by the oil companies to turn the responsibility back onto us for the things they were doing. And that really made me think, you know, that's because if all the Buddhists in the world decide to do this, it's not going to make, I just think it won't really do anything. The oil companies are just going to be busy over there doing their thing. And the companies are going to make all their money. And so you probably need to have both, but another topic that feels parallel to this is I just heard about the EATS Act, which is something that, you know, conservatives in Congress are trying to pass that is actually going to overturn, if they were able to do it, all the progress that, say, California just passed, or maybe a while ago, I don't know how long ago, passed regulations for how animals need to be minimum standards for animal treatment, which are the strictest in the country. And so agriculture doesn't like this and wants to change it so that the minimum standard is the rule instead of the highest standard. And I just feel like focusing on, like, that just highlighted to me, like, oh wow, a lot of progress has been made for animal welfare. And aside from the fact that someone's trying to get rid of it, it seems like regulation so that when we invest in a company, it is already not destroying the planet because of, I mean, I know I maybe that's really idealistic to think, but I just feel like putting the burden on the individual is probably good for my conscience, but is maybe not going to do it.
That is a very good point. And a year or two ago, when I was totally involved with XR, I would have been like, you sing it, sister. Like, yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I hadn't really been looking at these so much through that lens of like, here's what the individual could do, you know? It does make me wonder though, when I think about this specificity, and I think about that one about like being, you know, committing ourselves to being, bearing witness to the suffering. And then, you know, like if we part of our vow is to not invest in companies that do this and this and that, right? Like through that very process, we would become more aware of all this shit.
Yeah.
I
see that.
It's kind of like it would open us more into but I mean he calls these in another circumstance like the interbeing precepts. So it's almost like becoming aware of how we are interconnected with all of these things. And it's kind of like for our welfare, but then also for theirs. So I don't know, interesting. Tyler.
Yeah, I just think I agree on the whole, you know, it's not on the individual to make these big changes, but it does, if we can engage ourselves, and maybe this is what you were sort of in, if we can help people see that there are little things we can do, when you start making those conscious efforts, you know, to like, I will not buy chocolate that is grown by children, and, you know, instead of like, I will not buy that, and I will buy the other ones, it's a first step to then getting us doing other things that are maybe bigger and getting part of other and that in this day and age with all of our things, it's not hard to come together with these small choices with large groups of people and, you know, boycott things or make a big, you know, maybe it's one example of one company and they lose a bunch of money once for a little bit, but it raises enough awareness that it does slowly cause change. So there's individual actions, I agree it shouldn't be put on, but we can together use those to raise awareness. I guess that's sort of being said. So we've been talking on this for a while, so we'll sort of take a step back.
Yeah. And then, you know, in some ways it's kind of unfair to discuss this without having read all of the precepts, because like the next one, reverence for life, we're committed not to kill and not to let others kill. We will not support any act of killing in the world, in our thinking, or in our way of life. We will diligently practice deep looking with our Sangha to discover better ways to protect life, prevent war, and build peace. So that's more of an outward looking one. And then the generosity, aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression. We're committed to cultivating generosity in our way of thinking, speaking, and acting. We will try to prevent others from profiting from human suffering or the suffering of other beings. And then the 10th one was protecting and nourishing the Sangha, aware that the essence and aim of a Sangha is the realization of understanding and compassion. We are determined not to use the Buddhist community for personal power, profit, or transform our community into a political instrument. As members of a spiritual community, we should nonetheless take a clear stand against oppression and injustice. We should strive to change the situation without taking sides in a conflict. That's an interesting one. That would be quite a juicy conversation. Is that even possible? Whatever. So anyway, so there are other aspects of these precepts which do a little more outward turning. Rina, did you still have something you wanted to say? Will you come up here so they can hear you?
About taking side on a conflict?
Oh, no, let's not even go there.
Well, actually, yes. I think there are things that are sometimes not possible because you do have a personal story. And you do have opinion, but maybe I think the right thing in a community is not to dismiss other sides, mm-hmm. Or not to be very critical about the other sides, and be open, you know, going back to, I don't know, what was it, 2 or 3, be open, right? And and try to listen and accept other opinions, but yeah, not having side. I think there are places in this world that are demonstrating pure evil, and not taking side on it is actually allowing this darkness to spread. So that is the only part that I'm like, you know.
No, I guess you have to explore, like, what does it mean to take a side, right? Because I, at great risk of upsetting anyone, I am willing to speak out and say Donald Trump should not be our president. Like, and this is not, I don't think we should all assume we're Democrats, all assume we're liberals, anything like that. Like, this is somebody who's threatening our democracy and not treating human beings like human beings. So, like,
but I think also I could kind of
and yet I could see it being really problematic, like within a Sangha, because in particular that precept was talking about within a Sangha. Like, how often do you take that kind of stand, right? Because if Coral disagrees,
that would be dangerous.
Then you don't belong, then you have to leave, or so then creating that kind of divisiveness, and then you're breaking like those first precepts of trying to like kind of force people into a way of thinking. But I love this in the sense that we're used to this in our precepts, right? One precept might like you have to break this precept in order to keep this one. And
yeah, but like also like you can say that your opinion is that Trump should not be the president, but you also happy to have conversations with people that think that Trump should be the president, right? I'm sure that you don't,
and that those could be some intriguing conversations,
you know. Sure. But I'm actually excited to talk with someone about it.
And that kind of mutual respect, right? Yes. So you respect the person, even if you don't respect their opinion, you respect them and their humanity.
Yep.
And it's not helpful not to. Like, we don't actually make any progress by just intimidating and yelling at each other.
I learned, by the way, I don't know, kind of related to what a genius said. With my age, I guess, I learned that people having the opinions that they have because the life that they lived, they didn't came up with that. So they're just the result of the life experience that they had. And always when I interact with people, sometimes I can be pleased about it, but I always remember that. And it really helps me to be like, all right, sure, you can think this way. That's fine.
Yeah. Thank you. Mick? Sorry, Ruthanne, go ahead.
Thank you. I like the language of the precepts that we're looking at tonight. And actually, I like keeping those precepts, in a sense, on my screen. It's like when we first start looking at our own precepts, which ones jump out at me. And the muscle is actually memory it's a muscle, I mean, in our conscious mind. And I think keeping it front and forward, nobody cares what I have been boycotting for the last 3 or 4 decades. And when I would say to people, some of my friends in UK are talking about changing some of their extensions at work while they were working, of not traveling on airplanes, that they were in a position where they could say no because of carbon footprint. And that was happening like 2 decades ago. Yes, it's prompted by the oil company so that we feel guilty, but still, you know, what's ever out there that we can digest and live with individually for ourselves, I don't think is a bad thing. And we don't have to, you know, put it on a placard. But if it's on our screen, I feel that invitation through my practice. And it's okay. Nobody has to agree or discuss it with me, but I'm comfortable in the Sangha to say, well, here's where I'm at. And never mind that I keep calling my same people in Washington. They know my voice by now, and that's okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruthann. All right, one more, Mick.
Yeah, I'll be kind of quick. I think one of the reasons that I may be bristling at these descriptions of the precepts, like I view our precepts as almost like a twofold thing. Number one, there's like a rule part of it that is just like, hey, don't do this thing. But another thing about them is they're like a lens through which I can examine my own behavior. Like, you know, am I using this type of behavior as an intoxicant? And I find that really valuable about practice. And I think, I guess I'm just bristling because I'm just used to it being so wide open. You know, it's like free verse. It's like what you go and explore the space and like see what being intoxicated means to you. And just to me, this seems like it's a little more heavy handed in telling me like what that means. That's probably just a matter of preference.
Well, although, I mean, I can't remember, Mick, whether you've ever been attracted to the idea of being a monk, but I think many of us, you know, even if you never really wanted to, you know, you read the descriptions of like, if you just lived according to these 200 rules or whatever, and this was just like, whatever, you don't handle money, you eat once a day, you eat what people put in front of you, you like, this is, and what I think is appealing about it is the relief of all of those decisions, and all of those decisions which, especially in modern life, have gotten so complicated. I mean, we can't even see the full ramifications of almost anything that we do. Just, I'll wrap it up quickly, but just, I've mentioned this before, but some of you are aware of the show The Good Place. And hopefully I won't ruin it for anybody who's gonna watch it. It's great in any case. But essentially, they realize at one point that, because it's a bunch of people who have woken up in heaven, and now they're in heaven, and they're like, you know, trying to figure out what heaven's really about. And at some point they recognize that like nobody's actually getting into heaven anymore, because like all of the actions that anybody is doing, because it's basically this intricate point system, like you have to like get a certain number of points to get into heaven. You can't get this many demerits. And anything, like you buy your mom some flowers for Mother's Day, and then it turns out those flowers were raised and, you know, pesticides, and it destroyed them, you know, it was picked by migrant workers who aren't paid. And like almost anything you do actually has all kinds of negative consequences as well. I just thought that was such a beautiful image for like, I want the choices. I definitely want the choices. I want the choice to fly home and see my family in January. And yet I kind of liked it during COVID when I didn't have that choice. And then I just wasn't flying. Now I have the choice. I'm going to make it. And So anyway, I think I'll just leave you with that. Yeah.
I don't know if we have time, but what you're saying brings up something for me that I think about a lot in terms of whether it's politics, schools, religions, anything, that sometimes I have an issue when everything's laid out. Okay. Just, I know a lot of people are comfortable with, I just have to follow these rules. But then I think we lose critical thinking that is so important. I mean, I guess it's a whole different thing talking about being a monk, but just in general, I know a lot of people don't, it's hard to weigh things, like make decisions and make those constant choices of, is this moral, is this ethical? But I so value that ability to think critically about everything. I don't belong to a political party. I don't like dogma. Like every little point,
I like to look at it for what it is. So that's just me. But we're wired differently. Yeah. Yeah. That's just, that's
all right.
That's
well,
my thought.
So nobody's gonna be insisting that we take the four mindfulness trainings anytime soon, huh? Good food for thought, though.
I'm not saying it's all bad. It's just brought up this point.
Each to their own. Each to their own. We got good precepts.
Yeah.
All right. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajnam Paramita.
Was fun.
Bye. Thank you all. Anybody want to keep those? You're welcome.
Good night.